You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Morning. Broadcasting live from beautiful Jacksonville, North Carolina, home of the 2nd Marine Division and the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, along to a whole lot of other stuff. So excited to be here and in what's been a busy week so far and start of a second week. So if you haven't listened in a while, I want to say last Tuesday, flew to D.C. and then did a post-traumatic winning for a group that the wife of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff put together. And so did that at the Pentagon. Got a chance to meet the Secretary of Navy. Hopefully going to get on his schedule, because that's what he said to do. Did it in Quantico on, that was Wednesday, did it on Quantico on Thursday, and people from universities showed up to see it, people from the museum saw it, and we had an interesting conversation about the number of people that get triggered by something they see at the museum, and they're looking to, with the opening of the Iraq and Afghanistan exhibits, I want to say next year or later this year, they are looking, you know, they're looking for something relative to trauma and PTSD to include. And so so we'll see what happens with that. So then on Friday afternoon, I flew to Dallas, and then met George Mendoza, who I'd only corresponded with, and they had put together an event in a town at the City Hall in Granbury, and for a Friday night. It was very well attended, and it's just incredible honestly, the reaction that people have, because it, the presentation in and itself, you all have heard it, and or bits and pieces of it, and you, I think that's part of the reason why you listen to, because you hear the truth. And so, but we don't talk like that. And the things what people walk up to you and say are stunning, to say the least. And so, so just got a chance to meet some great people there, and George, you know, first and foremost. And so it was a great night. And then later that night, after we went and grabbed something to eat at Chili's in Granbury, I drove to Waco, Texas, and I had Sergeant Major Jim Booker. I met in 2004, and I was Paul Kennedy, who's a good friend of mine. He was a battalion commander of 2-4, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, and I was in Ramadi at a place called Blue Diamond, working for the division. He was, and his battalion were across the river. His headquarters was at Hurricane Point, which you could see across the river. So one night, one afternoon, he calls me and says, "Hey, you want to go AI a raid with me tonight?" I said, "Yeah, I can do that." So this harkens back to our days as instructor at the basic school in IOC. And he said, my first lieutenant weapons company commander is headed out, and so I could use an extra set of eyeballs." I said, "All right, I'd love to, if Colonel Dunford will let me go," and he did. So, in fact, it was 15 years ago on Saturday, on Friday or Saturday, 15 years ago. And I know that because it was on the eve of, you know, 2-4. I want to say they lost 13 guys the following day. So, anyway, we were going downtown. And we stop about a mile, not a mile, maybe between a quarter and a half mile away from the police station. And so we pile out of the Humvees into the street at night. And I mean, it's after midnight. And I looked at Booker, Jim Booker, Sergeant Major type. And, you know, Marines pile out, you know, they form up to essentially move. Kind of a movement to contact, but more, you know, kind of a patrol through the street. And I kind of fall in at the rear, and along with Booker, and providing, helping out guys doing rear security. So, trying to stay out of the way. So, I looked at Sergeant Major Booker, and I said, "So why are we dismounting?" He said, "Well, they know we're coming, so we'll probably get ambushed." And we thought, that's awesome, right? So anyway, yeah, welcome to Ramadi. So we move, and nothing happens. We walk into the police compound, right? And so, you know, walled compound, concertina wire at the top. And there's all these Iraqi police guys. And they're kind of standing there, right, with their red and white dastasha on, their headdress thing, right? And their various uniforms. And with their Kalashnikovs, like, slung across their chests or whatnot. And so they're standing there. And Booker and I, we're walking inside the compound. And I look at him and I said, "Is it me, or does it seem scarier in here than it does out there?" And he looks at me and he starts laughing. He goes, "It's 10 times more dangerous in here." And so that was the first time I met him. And then, you know, one of the things that he brought up to me, hanging out over the weekend was, cause he lives, from Granbury, went to Waco. He lives just outside of Waco. So I didn't know that, but Paul Kennedy told me. He said, "Hey, go see Booker." I said, "All right, I'd love to." So, cause he's just a great guy, and, Marine, and cares about Marines, and just good. One of those people that's good to be around. So, he brought up a story. After Jason Dunham, corporal type, recipient of the Medal of Honor, was killed near Husaba. and for those of you not familiar with the story, Jason Dunham puts his helmet over a hand grenade that gets thrown, and then puts his and then lays on top of the helmet. He's ultimately killed by the blast of the grenade. And this commanding officer of the 7th Marine Regiment, which Jason Dunham was a part of, he brought the helmet down to General Mattis, what was left of it. And then Mattis handed it to me. Now, I think the helmet, that piece of the helmet, is on the USS Jason Dunham, though. I'm not sure, but somebody told me that. But it was like a little, it became a little shrine. I only showed it to, you know, my friends, because it wasn't going to be like an exhibit or anything like that. But it was, I want to say it was the right ear flap, the external part of the helmet. And so it might have been the right third of the helmet. And that was still, you would look at it and you'd say, hey, that's a helmet. And then there was what I can only describe as, they're strips of Kevlar, right? You know, Kevlar is a fabric. And what happens is it gets heated and treated, and it becomes a helmet. Yeah. So the blast had essentially turned the Kevlar into paper mache. I would tell you that back in the day when I was a kid, cheerleaders made their own pom-poms. You know, that paper mache stuff you hang for birthdays? It looked like that. You know, different shades of green. And so you looked at it, and in that, you saw his courage, right? And I showed it to a couple of my friends, and when they looked at it, they didn't say a word. It was in a cellophane bag. And I kept it in my desk, and they would just look at it, right? Like, wow. So anyway, I remember Sergeant Major Booker and Colonel Kennedy came over. It was probably for some commander's meeting or something like that. And he would always come say hi to me. Hey, Mac, what's going on? So he's a funny guy. So we would shoot shit. So I showed it to him, and he brought it up. I had forgotten about that, and he brought it up over the weekend. He said, "Hey, do you remember when you showed me that helmet?" I said, "Yeah, I'll never forget that thing." And he said, "I still think about that. I still think about that." And so he took me around. I was kind of tired when I drove down there on Friday night. And I've learned through staying up for nights in a row that, and most Marines will tell you this, that the way that they know they're tired is they can't do numbers anymore. They cease to be able to do numbers. And so I get to Waco, and I'm tired. And I'm driving. I got to rent a truck. Oh, wait till you hear that story. Let me just tell you, my life is like unbelievable right now, the things that happened to me. But anyway, I'll tell you that story in a second. He gives me his address. It's 1502 whatever street it is, right? I type it into my GPS as 2501. So I jumble the shit out of it. I get to a street. But there's no 2501. It dead ends at six in the 1600 block. And so it's like after midnight. It's right around midnight. And I'm like slow driving on the street. And all of a sudden I see somebody look out a window. So I just throw it in park and I get out. I'm like, this is Texas. I got a 50-50 shot to get shot. 50-50 chance to get shot. So, but the guy's friendly. He sees me get out of my truck and, he comes out of his house. I said, "Hey, you know a guy named Jim Booker that lives around here?" And he says, "No, I don't." And then he says, "What about?" I said, "What about the 2500 block?" He said, "Well, it might pick up on the other side of that field." And then his wife comes out, and she's like, "No, it doesn't. It dead ends here." I'm looking at that going, good luck with that, man. Good luck with that, bro. And he said, yeah, I guess it dead ends here. I'm like, shit. So I looked. So now I drive to the other end thinking, well, maybe there's an east and west. So I drive to the other end of the street. And I drive to the other end of the street, and I get all the way to where it dead ends. There's two dudes outside hanging out next to a pickup truck smoking cigarettes. Now it's about 12:20. And I'm thinking, yeah, straight up going to get shot in this dead-end street, right? And so I turned around, and I went and got a hotel room. So I called him in the morning. I said, hey, man, what happened last night? He's like, I waited for you. And so then he says, 15:02. And I went, oh, shit, man. I screwed that up, but got a good night's sleep. And then I went on Saturday. I went to the Warrior reunion event that I was in Texas to actually do. And James Ferguson and his whole crew. Let me tell you, man, what a great. First of all, just great guys, and so committed to helping units get back together. And to discuss their stuff. And it was, and I'll tell you about that here in a little bit, but it was an incredible, incredible event. And so did that on Saturday, and then after the event in the evening, I went to Sergeant Major Booker's house. And then he took me for a drive around where they live and showed me a bunch of stuff and hung out with him and it was awesome. Again, I hadn't seen him in 15 years and it was just great. And again, you know what it's like? The craziest stuff with guys like that is it doesn't feel right. You pick up where you left off. And so it's good stuff. So anyway, and then yesterday got up in Waco, drove to Dallas, and then flew to Jacksonville last night, and then got here and actually went over and did some laundry at General Furness's house. So had dinner with the Furness family, and then came here and crashed in at a hotel here in Jacksonville. We're doing this today. And then what's going on this morning is going to go and do a little audio check over at the USO, where we will do the first ever community event. Well, you know what? I shouldn't say that. It'll be the second community event because the first one we did Friday night. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that. It's the reaction, really very interesting because it's a non-Marine event, right? And we're sharing our culture with them. So very, very interesting. And then, so we'll do that today. And then at 1:30 for all you military people out there. Or if you're just a dork and tell time like that, you'll understand that. So at 1:30, we'll do it for the 2nd Marine Division again. And then tonight, we'll do it again for spouses. So looking forward to that. And, so we'll start the program, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you about my rental car experience, which was absolutely crazy. No, just cool. And then we'll talk about the event on Saturday, the Warrior Reunion Foundation thing. And if you're part of a unit that hasn't gotten together, you should reach out to the Warrior Reunion Foundation. Right, and the Marines of Lima, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, had gathered together for the first time in 15 years. And it was great. But you know what? It's rough. Gold Star families there. There's families that have lost people to suicide since they've come home. Their kids, you know. And it's not really an event that lends itself to children being there. But I'll tell you a little story about that. and just an amazing experience to watch them and the bond that they share as all veterans, especially, you know, they fought in the marquee battle of the Afghan-Iraq wars, which was the Battle of Fallujah in November of the culminating battle there in November of 2004. And so so it was very cool to and a great honor to be in their company, because I was in Ramadi doing current operations with General Roger Turner, who was a major at the time. So we split the current operations staff. Roger and I stayed in Ramadi and handled the rest of the battle space, and two other majors, both who I had taught at IOC. I had taught Roger at IOC too, but two other majors, J.J. Carroll and John Myrna, went down to Fallujah, where we had a kind of forward COC. And they ran the actual, they took care of the fight. But, you know, I told those guys, you know, we watched what you guys did every day. We watched the courage and selflessness. And I told them what an incredible honor it was to be in their company. And so, anyway, it was an incredible weekend. And, again, this week, going to be a great week. We'll do post-traumatic winning here for the division. We'll do it out in public for the second time. And then the Marine South Expo starts on Thursday. You know, the endless party continues. So yeah, so it's just been, and then post-traumatic winning will be part of that event on Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday go home and see Jack and Joe. So with all that said, and with a whole lot more to say, the United States Marine Corps Band makes the morning official. What was that? Oh, I know what that was. So the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning to you. This is dedicated on this Monday morning to George Mendoza, who put together the event in Granbury on Friday, and to everybody who helped him there, and then James Ferguson with the Warrior Reunion Foundation and all his entire crew that does such good things for units that get together. So this is dedicated to both those groups. What a privilege it was to be in their company and in some way contribute to how we look at trauma, living with trauma, and how we can help other people in our communities. So well done, George and Jim and all your crew. So this is dedicated to you all.
Our flag is on the ground. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vest on me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. We got to win.
Yeah, I spent a little time with Mrs. Miller, the lovely Darcy Miller, on a Wednesday. Yeah, when did I meet him? 92, when I PCS the 29 Palms. He was an instructor at the basic school, Captain Miller, when I was a lieutenant. And so I remembered him. I don't think I had any contact with him. But I remembered him. And so I got a chance to meet, he left me behind. Yeah, the battalion goes to Somalia. He leaves me behind. I think I told that story last week. But anyway, he leaves me behind because I had a prior tour in light armored reconnaissance, right? So I knew the vehicle. I'd been to supply school. So I knew about, you know, things like the doing status report, right? Things like that. And so he calls me into his office and says, you're not going to Somalia. And I did not take it very well. I'm not going to lie to you. And then he said to me, look, I need somebody that can take care of all of this, you know, with the XO who's staying behind. And I need somebody to help, you know, Darcy, you know, with God only knows what's going to happen. And I said, so it's me. He said, it's you. So I did, you know, so that's when I first met Darcy and got to know her. And no, it's just good people, good friends, and it was very cool to and she helped me. You know, I was I asked for help if she could help with you know, the whole base housing thing. I wanted to put somebody in touch with somebody, and she was awesome. So anyway, Neller, he's getting short. The all right, we'll check the weather here on a Monday morning. And just so you know, I'm doing this at 8:16 a.m. Eastern time. So this will air in about an hour and 45 minutes. So all these temperatures are probably warmer by the time you're hearing this. But nonetheless, these are them. It's getting warm in Quantico. Cloudy and 64 already at 8 in the morning. Camp Lejeune in the same. Cloudy and 64. Don't see that often. In Granbury, Texas, it's cloudy and 59. Rained all weekend on Saturday down in Waco. It was nasty. Rain and windy, and I didn't think we were in a kind of covered shelter. You know, some concrete slab. And, you know, the thing probably about, I don't know, 50 yards long with a shed at one end and the sides open. And wasn't sure. That's where they had their memorial service that day. That's where meals were served. And it was on a big ranch. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And so, anyway, the in 29 Palms, it is, the sun's just rising, 60 degrees under clear skies at Camp Pendleton. Sun's just rising and 50 degrees at Camp Pendleton. And in Okinawa, Japan, dark, cloudy, and 74, so warming up in the Western Pacific. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, late in the day, it is sunny and 79, so a pretty day in Iraq. And Afghanistan, boom, summer just busted out. Cloudy and 93 degrees. Yeah! Afghanistan getting hot. Afghanistan was like the coldest place, or it was colder than Iraq all winter. And all of a sudden, it decided, yeah, we're not going to be cold anymore. All right, sun coming up in Costa Mesa, the corporate headquarters of All Marine Radio. It is 58 degrees there, and they've got a gale. They've got a gale watch. Like, what is that? Small craft advisory in effect from 3 p.m. this afternoon to 9 p.m. Tuesday. Gale watch remains in effect from Tuesday morning through Tuesday evening. National Weather Service in Los Angeles / Oxnard, up by Santa Barbara, has issued a small craft advisory, which is in effect from 3 p.m. this afternoon to 9 p.m. Tuesday. Winds, west winds, 20 to 30 knots, with gusts up to 35 knots. Right, locally knots, gusts up to 40 knots. Like, okay, so how fast is a knot? Like, who knows what a knot is? Like, why would they even write that kind of shit? Oh, yeah, 40 knots. I know what that is. Now, it says 40 kt. What do you think I'm going to get back? Kilotons. A knot. 40 knots equals 46 miles an hour. So I don't know how you convert that. I don't know how you convert that. So anyway, that is a look at your weather. We'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to finish narrating my weekend. You're going to hear about my rental car experience, which, you know, again, these things happen to me. It's crazy. And then I'll tell you about Saturday, some of the things I saw, that really, really, me saying that tugged at your heart would not be, wouldn't even be close to be accurate. So, don't touch that dial. More of this program coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a group can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soaking in this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I dream, yeah, I let it all.
and only Peyton Davis. She's traveling for work this week. I wanted her to come here. Yeah. Didn't work out though. All right, let me finish my weekend. Yeah. So, I land at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and the reservation I made, I'm looking at rental cars, right? And they were like $15 on the weekend. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So, and I'm flipping through cars, and I see my truck, a Nissan Frontier. I'm like, it's going to be awesome. I'll drive a newer version of my truck. So I click on that, right? And so I land, I get there, and they give me the keys, right? I do all that. And I give me the keys. I walk out there, but it's not a Nissan Frontier. It's a Nissan Titan, right? It's a big black thing. I was like, I'm not driving that. So, but because I wanted to drive my truck. So I go back in, I get back in line, and then guy sees me, goes, hey, you were just here. What's wrong? And I said, well, the car that they gave me is not a Frontier. It's an old stall. And he goes, oh. He goes, well, it happens sometimes. So he's chatting with me as he's, you know, kind of unscrewing this thing. And he says, so where are you coming from? I said, Washington, D.C. And he said, what were you doing back there? I said, I kind of talk about post-traumatic stress disorder and how you can, you know, turn that into something good in your life. And he looks up at me and he says, you know, we all have it. And I said, I know that. But you're the first person who's ever said that to me. And he smiled. And I said, we do all have it. I said, in fact, if you're in the military and get it, you're lucky because everybody will kiss your ass. Nobody kisses anybody else's ass. And so we start this conversation. And he says, well, he says, so what do you do? Do you just speak publicly? And I said, well, I do a radio show called All Marine Radio. I want to say his name is Marcelo. And I said, here's my card. And I gave him my business card. And he said, I could listen to it. I said, yeah, just go there and go to the podcast page and type in winning. And just listen to some of the, just pick any of them. And you'll find them interesting. And I said, but go to the website and find the tab that says post-traumatic winning and download the two goals and the eight commandments, and then put those on your phone, and I promise them you'll use them in the next 30 days, and you'll change somebody's life. And he looks at me, and he says, you're doing God's work. Now, and I don't know why that affected, right? I always joke about my menstrual cycle. Like, I don't know why it impacted me the way it did. But like, I'm standing at the rental car counter. I get tears in my eye. And I said, like, where's my mom when I need her, right? And I don't know why I thought that. Like, God, I wish my mom was standing next to me. And so he gives me the keys. He said, I'm going to listen. And he looked at me and he said, God bless you. And I said, thank you. So now I'm walking out of the rental car place. I've got my sunglasses on, thankfully. I've got tears in my eyes. My allergies are acting up. I've got tears in my eyes. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I mean, so, and again, these things happen to me, you know, just out of the blue, it seems. And so anyway, I just want to share with you, you know, so I've never done this in public for civilians. I've only done it for people that, you know, are Marines or people in the military. And so it's different. How do you relate it to them? How do you relate our culture to them? And so, but afterwards, it was amazing the number of people that stayed after on Friday night. And George was very patient. He and his daughter waited, and then we went and grabbed something to eat. But how many people felt touched by it? In what way that they stayed around to talk? And so it was just wonderful. And a retired Air Force officer down there, Dave, and he's doing public health work now. And so there might be an opportunity for us to do some work together there. And he loved it. He loved it. And so he went to dinner with us. Actually, he said he was going to buy me dinner. And then George bought me dinner. So I emailed Dave and I said, hey, man, you still owe me dinner, just for the record. He said, I know. I know. He said, I didn't weasel out of it. I said, I thought you might have. He said, no, I didn't. But no, I had great conversations. And so that was cool. And then I just want to talk for a few minutes about my experience. I'd never gone to a Warrior Reunion Foundation event. But the guy who put me in touch with James Ferguson, who runs it, whose idea it was, is a mutual friend, Dan Robertson. Dan was a first lieutenant artillery officer, and he was in charge. His platoon was General Kelly's personal security detachment, PSD as it's known. So they would roll General Kelly around the battle space in 2004. And he used to describe himself as an aide. Well, I said, you know, you're not aide material, Dan. You didn't go through the rigorous screening process. You're not uniquely qualified or hand selected, so stop it. But Dan Robertson's a great guy. He's a Yankee fan too. Yankees crushed Baltimore yesterday. They hit more home runs. They hit 7 home runs in a rout of the O's in Camden Yards for the Yankees' first sweep of the season. And neither Aaron Judge nor Giancarlo Stanton, who's injured right now, hit a home run. Everybody else piling it on. But anyway, I digress. So, Dan Robertson introduces me to James Ferguson. Ferguson knows Josh Goldberg and their buddies. So Josh was there too. So it was good. So I get there Saturday morning, and it's this beautiful, very, very nice Texas ranch. I described for you like the open-sided barn with concrete slab where they had the memorial service, where they fed everybody. And then across the dirt road is a very nice, I would call it a bunkhouse. They had a bunch of cots in there, and that's where everybody stayed. And so, you see them hanging out with each other, and they haven't seen each other in 15 years. And their company gunny, no, Sergeant Major was there. Their company first sergeant, who is now retired as a sergeant major, he was there. And they got up, their company gunny, who's now a sergeant major, but he got up and spoke with no notes, which is not easy to do. And he crushed it. And, you know, and the nature of his remarks, and the first sergeant, who retired as a sergeant major, but they were company gunny and first sergeant of Kilo Company 3-1 during the Battle of Fallujah. So the nature of their remarks talked about being better, taking care of each other. And so I'm sitting there listening during the memorial service, and I was so excited to be able to do post-traumatic winning because it's exactly the right thing to follow up those kind of comments. And so it was awesome. So I was sitting there listening to him. But the gunny, yeah, he spoke with no notes, and he was great. He was great. And so the first sergeant, he got up after that, and he spoke. He said, I need my notes. And I told him, I said, hell, I got to have notes. I can't do it. Because you start talking about emotional things like that, and it starts moving in your head, and then you forget. I do anyway. I forget stuff, or I skip something, and then later on you're like, "Oh, damn it, I didn't say that. I wanted to talk to them." So anyway, so they speak. Sitting in front of me was a woman with a boy who might have been 10 years old. And normally kids aren't allowed at these things, but she explained to me later when I asked that, you know, he has 50 uncles. His dad, her husband, committed suicide, I want to say, a couple years ago. And I want to say, Sergeant Major said, First Sergeant, said they've lost more Marines since they've come home from the battalion than they did in the fight, which is sobering, sobering. So anyway, this woman explained to me that, you know, her son says, tells everybody, I have 50 uncles, which are, you know, all the Marines of Lima Company. And she said, but, and they're all great with him, and they said, you know, when you need his call. She said, but, you know, he hasn't spent time with them. And so I asked if we could come, if he could come, so that he could know them better. And so when he does need them, and of course, right, you know, you can imagine the kind of guy that, you know, that James Ferguson is. I mean, of course he can come. And so, but he was sitting in front of me, and it was a standard Marine Corps memorial service, right, by the numbers. Color guard there from a reserve unit. I want to say the Ordnance Maintenance Company. What do they call it? El Mako or something like that. Out of the reserve unit in the area. And they were great. First Sergeant was there early, and they were rehearsing the shit out of them, which is awesome. You know, the Marine Corps is crazy. So, anyway. But it's cool. I mean, it's our tribe, right? And even when they're lining up chairs, right? Just sitting there talking, and Marines are lining up chairs. They're not, these are like, I mean, the guys are not active duty Marines. They've been out of the Marine Corps, a lot of them, for, you know, over 10 years and whatnot. They're lining up chairs. And there was, you know, the man-made crease in concrete, right? The joints, right? And so they're lining up the chairs on that joint, and then people are coming behind them and, like, moving them a quarter inch, because that's what Marines do, to make sure they're even more aligned. So it was funny watching them. So the memorial service is exactly the ones we do in the Marine Corps. And so this boy is sitting in front of me, two rows, along with his mom. And I couldn't help but notice him. And you see him put his, you know, lay his head against his mother. And you see the pain. And, you know, the only thing, you know, the thing that was in my head was, man, we've got to stop this shit. We've got to get better. We've got to be there for each other, because, you know, that stuff brutal. That stuff absolutely, positively brutal. That poor little guy. You know, and so, but I just want to compliment, you know, the Warrior Reunion Foundation and Ferg, you know, for just a compassionate way that they go about doing everything they do. Because that little guy needed to be at that place, no matter how hard it was. He needed to connect to his uncles. He needed to spend time with them, so that when he does feel that he, you know, he knows them, and he feels comfortable, you know, FaceTiming or texting or whatever, or picking up the phone and calling. And so, but it was brutal. The other thing I saw was, and I'll put a couple pictures up. And I won't mention her name, but one of the Gold Star moms, after the memorial service, there was a fairly large round table with pictures of all the Marines that were killed in that fight that belonged to Lima Company. And and her only child was a corporal and was killed in Fallujah in 2004 during that fight. And so I was standing there talking to some Marines, and I don't know why she caught my eye, but she did. And she was taking a picture of the table. But before she took the picture, she was going around, and there was poppies placed on all the pictures, right, during the memorial service. And so she walked up, and she was straightening the poppies on every picture. So when she took the picture, it would be the way she wanted it to look. And so she caught my eye, and I was watching her, and she took the picture, and then she, you know, her husband was there. So later on, I walked up, and I introduced myself. And I gave her a hug, and she looked at me, and she said, nobody hugs me like Marines hug me. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, you know how you just hug me, like strong hug me? She said, only Marines hug me like that. She said, it makes me feel so good to feel that strength, because I know that's your feeling for my son when you hug me. And I looked at her and I said, it is. I said, I never met your son, but I've seen thousands of Marines like him. I didn't know how great they are. And I just wanted to introduce myself. And I took a picture with her. And I'll tell you how much, you know, we care. And she looked at me and she said, thank you. So I met her husband. She lost my card because when I was leaving that evening, they were leaving too to go back to their hotel. And I said, now send me that picture we took, because they took it with her camera. And she said, okay. And all of a sudden she starts yelling, wait, wait, wait. I said, what? She said, I lost your card. I was wearing somebody else's jacket. And they have your card. She said, give me your card. So I gave her my card. And in fact, she made a mask card for her son, and I have that, and I'll put that in the post with a picture. I took a picture of kind of the back, not kind of, but just the back of that young boy, as you know, during the memorial service. I took a picture of her looking at that table, so I'll put those up. You can get a sense of the things I'm talking about. But, yeah, it was, it's a lot. It's the side that we don't see, right? And it sucks. Especially that little boy. And so, to me, I left, you know, that with that in my head. And probably more committed to doing this, because, man, we've got to get people out of the black place they go to where they would disregard that little boy because they're in so much pain. We've got to get to those places. We've got to get to those people, and we've got to stop this stuff, because brutal, absolutely brutal. And then before the memorial service, Sergeant Major Booker came by. I told him where I was. And funny story. He shows, you know, Booker hangs out with Marines like nothing. And then the guy who was a company first sergeant, and I wish I could remember names, but I'm not doing it today. He sees Booker, and Booker's got a beard now. He's got a big gray beard, gray and black beard. And he says, "That's Jim Booker." And I was like, "How the hell can you tell?" He said, "I know Jim Booker." I said, "Are you kidding me?" And so it's just cool, right? Marines are our Marines. So Booker just walks over there, strikes up a conversation, and pretty soon he's got this, you know, this gathering of Marines around him. And it was cool. It's the warmest, when we gather, it's the warmest place in the world, right? You're around our tribe, and you feel that. You feel that warmth, and it's cool. It's cool. I'll tell you one more story, and then we'll take a break, and we'll do some news headlines today. Yeah, as I unpack the weekend. So after I did my thing, and Josh helped me out a little bit, but he was there as an observer and kind of to give Ferg feedback. And so I wanted, when he told me that, I was like, all right, then I won't have him do too much. But Josh is really great when he talks about Viktor Frankl, also about Jeremiah. I almost said Jeremiah Denton, but Admiral Stockdale, Admiral James Stockdale. Josh knows a ton about the Henry Hilton and all that. So anyway, when I got done, I'm standing there talking to maybe a half dozen Marines. And one Marine looks at me and he says, "When you brought up that event with your sister, I wasn't ready for that." And he said, "I was pissed." And I just stood there. And he said, "But then, as I thought about it, I know that it takes courage to talk about that." And I said, "Well, I don't know about that." And he said, "No," he said, "it does." He said, "But," and then he stopped. And he said, "I've never spoken about this, ever." And this is all guys in his company, we're all standing there. And he says, "I watched my 2-year-old daughter die." And he said, "And it was worse than anything that I experienced in Fallujah." And his friends were just staring at him. And so we do this group hug thing. And he looked at me and he said, "Thank you." And I said, you just did the most important thing. You started to talk about it. And I said, "And I promise you, if you talk about it, if you share your pain with other people, you will change their lives. You will change their life. And you will transform your own." And it was just, crazy. Not crazy stuff, because it's not crazy. And one of the things that is constantly brought back to me, almost on a daily basis, is how much pain there is out there. How much pain there is. And we don't talk about it. We don't deal with it well. And let me just tell you, it's one of the things that I absolutely love about post-traumatic winning. Is post-traumatic winning, for better or for worse, brings it out. And people, whether they were raped as a child, which I got told, by 2 weeks ago, a company gunning walked up to me and said I was sexually assaulted when I was 6 years old. And I've never talked about it. The power of the presentation and the delivery, I think the way it's done, it'll blow you away. And I never cease to be amazed, though, at the amount of pain that exists in our culture and the number of people that are so hurting. And I will tell you this, you know, what we're doing doesn't answer the mail for them. It doesn't. And we've got to get better at mental health. And I don't mean, when I say mental health, what I don't mean is medicate and go to some talk therapy with somebody. We've got to get better at community approaches to mental health. And that is you knowing how you can do it. And if you know how you can do it, if I quote Dr. Trivedi, you know, 1%, less than 1% of the population that in his study ultimately needed to go to a psychiatrist. But we've got to get good at that, how you do it, because there's just a ton of it. And they need to know that they can convert that to the good. They need to know that. So, with all of that unpacked, we'll take a break. We'll come back, check some news headlines here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. We'll do that. Coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you. And we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you have promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good. But the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Toby Keith. That's right. He sings my key.
She took my new sunglasses and my old jean jacket, and she never even bothered to ask. You could say I haven't seen her since late last summer. But even now,
somebody asked me yesterday, they said, does it take an emotional toll on you to do this all the time now? And I said, yes and no. Yeah, it's an emotional thing. And you know, the other thing that you learn to do is you learn that every person that comes up to you, they're revealing something to a stranger a lot of times for the first time ever. So they deserve your undivided attention. And your intense undivided attention, and I try to do that with everybody, and so it does. But you know what? The inspiration that they provide more than offsets the emotional part of it, not even close. It more than offsets it more than offsets whatever emotional toll it takes on you. I mean, it's something you can't, it's, in my opinion, something you can't do enough of. So very cool, very cool. All right, we'll check news from Marineland. And there's not a whole lot of, Marine news. I would say there's not any Marine new news, when you look at, and I was just looking early bird stuff. Story about General Berger. I'll share these three stories with you. And then, but I'll tell you what, there's a whole bunch of real interesting DOD news, I thought anyway, relative to most days. I'll tell you a funny story. So, there's a first top story that has to do with Camp Lejeune. Congress comes up with $400 million for Camp Lejeune storm repairs. Marine Corps Commandant Robert Neller said Friday that Congress has agreed to provide $400 million in funding to repair storm damage to family housing and other structures at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, a down payment on the $3.5 billion he says is necessary. On Twitter, he wrote, "We have received word that Congress has agreed with the administration's request to reprogram $400 million. Now remember, reprogram. to help Marines and their families recover from damage inflicted by Hurricane Florence and Michael. Miller had warned Congress that unless they and the administration came up with funding for the Lejeune recovery, the service would have to dig deep into its existing budget to pay for repairs impacting overall readiness. Marine officials told Stars and Stripes on Friday that about two-thirds of the funding found by Congress would go to roof and interior building repairs on the base. The remainder, the outlet reported, would be used to repair external infrastructure ranging from flight lines to fences to training roads. Stars and Stripes also reported that $400 million reprogram request was part of an effort to reallocate a total of $600 million for hurricane recovering, a move noted in the Pentagon's 2020 budget request. The other $200 million requested, if approved, would go to the United States Air Force to repair damage caused by Hurricane Michael at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida, which hit last October. So, good news. It's not $3.5 billion, but it's money nonetheless. And again, the Marine Corps budget just getting hammered. Again, operational funding being transferred. PAX is being canceled. East Coast PAX is being canceled because it costs so much to get everybody out there. And all the gear and all the rest of that stuff. It's an article written by Gina Harkins. So she sent me an email on Thursday. So Friday I called her. She said, I heard you talking about knowing General Berger. I said, well, I don't know that I want to talk about it. I mean, I got in trouble, and he was a presiding officer, and that's how I met him. That's the second time I met him. The first time I met him in Fallujah. He was the CO of the 8th Marine Regiment. And so, I said, I don't know that I want to be interviewed about that, though. And she laughs. She's like, oh, that's how you know. I said, yeah. I said, and then when I told the story, though. I'll tell it again. But I do a post-traumatic winning at the General Officer Symposium. And who do you think is sitting in the table? So it's on a stage, right? Portable stages have been brought in, right? And so who do you think is at the table dead center in front of the stage? That's right. None other than General Berger. And I look down, I'm like, oh, shit. So at the end of the whole thing, right, and it went over in time and whatnot, So we had a question and answer period. The commandant asked the first question. Ellen Dunford stood up and talked, asked another question. Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps spoke. And then, so when it all wound down, I said, before we get out of here, I have one more thing on a personal note. And I looked down at General Berger and I said, sir, the last time I saw you was not very pleasant. I just want to apologize and thank you for your graciousness. And he nodded and smiled, and he said, not a problem, not a problem, Mac. And so, anyway, I told her that story. She's like, I said, yeah, I don't know that I want to roll that one all over the planet. She said, I don't blame you. So, anyway, but there's a story about General Berger becoming the next commandant of the Marine Corps. Next story. Marine Corps is finally fielding a new 40-millimeter grenade launcher. And then there's a picture. A Marine prepares to shoot the M320 mounted on the M4 carbine at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, on June 6, 2017. Finally about to get a new grenade launcher to replace the Vietnam-era M203. A switch the Army made about 10 years ago. The Marine Corps plans to field the M320A1 40-millimeter grenade launcher, which can be used in a standalone mode or mounted beneath weapons such as the M29 infantry assault rifle in fiscal 2020, according to MAR-4 System Command. So, I'm looking for a good picture of it. Uh, I was looking to see. I mean, it's not that multi-tube thing. The Army first began fielding the M320 in 2009, later upgraded it to the A1. Unlike the 203, the breech of the M320 opens to the side to accept longer 40mm grenades. Whoa. It also has a pistol grip, so troops don't have to use the weapon's 30-round magazine as a pistol grip. Maximum effective range of 150 meters on a point target, such as a window, and 350 meters max effective range for an area target. Weighs 3.4 pounds unloaded, 6.4 pounds in its standalone configuration. So, new M203. Well, new 40mm 203, say goodbye. Here's how F-35 technology would be compromised if Turkey also had the S-400 anti-aircraft system. Yeah, I don't think, right? So imagine Turkey having both systems. And imagine them flying exercises where they're painting the 400 or the F-35 with the 400. And imagine that the Russians have the same hacks built into everybody's software that the Chinese do. And maybe that we do too. And the Russians are going in there pulling that data out. So that's just me. U.S. Air Force was able to bomb Libya with impunity after knocking out its relics of an integrated air defense system. But what if a country actually had maintained a competent integrated air defense system? That would pose a different challenge altogether. Russia's S-400 system, for instance, mixed with other overlapping missile batteries, fighter aircraft, and command and control nodes, would have tested America's ability to carry such an air raid like never before. That's part of the reason why U.S. lawmakers, right, are not going to approve the F-35, at least not now. It's not because the U.S. would attack Turkey, but because the systems its leaders are looking to acquire could be used to gather intelligence on how America's latest generation fighter, the F-35, and possibly others operate. The information could wind up in the hands of the Russians. Quote, "It's astounding to see everyone in the same direction on this," said Rick Berger, a defense budget military acquisition research guy at AEI, former Senate Budget Committee staffer. "The disagreement over the S-400 exacerbates the strategic and tactical concerns that exist in an already shaky alliance. Quote, the whole should be Turkey and NATO." I'm sorry. "The whole should Turkey be in NATO?" question pops up a lot, and it is inevitable, Berger said. "We're kind of sleepwalking into this inevitability that Turkey is out of the F-35 program. If we don't give them the F-35, why would we want our people there?" With the F-35 flying in close proximity to the S-400 system over time, you could collect sensitive stealth characteristics of this F-35 and learn its detailed stealth capabilities, the expert said. What did I tell you? You don't have to be a genius to figure this shit out. Guys are getting paid millions of dollars. Here's a story. Listen to this. What's that French term? Sac la boue? Civilian accidentally ejected from French fighter during fly-along? The privileged experience of a fly-along with a French Air Force Rafale B fighter jet went terribly wrong last month for one civilian who was shockingly ejected from the jet during the takeoff from Saint-Dizier Air Base in northeastern France. The unidentified 64-year-old passenger, who does not belong to the French Ministry of Armed Forces, sustained back injuries but was listed in stable condition after being taken to a hospital. His health condition is not a cause for concern, says Colonel Cyril Duvervier. Right. All 64-year-old non-military people to get ejected, like, walk away from it, no problem. Prior to the flight, the passenger was likely to receive a detailed briefing on all operational procedures, according to David Senchiati of The Aviationist. You clearly explain blah, 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 blah. His injuries can simply be explained as lack of preparation. It remains unclear whether the error was a result of the passenger touching a do-not-touch apparatus, or if the jet simply found his company less than preferable and said au revoir. Oh, now we're going to be funny. So, I don't know. I don't think that's very funny. I don't think it's not a funny story. States an interesting story. States in the military clash on cleanup of toxic chemicals. Now, let me just tell you, and you've heard me say this before, but the DOD sucks when it comes to this kind of shit. And they're doing it now with mold and lead paint. And what do? They deny that there's any linkage, and then they let these people take them to court because they know the settlement would be too big. And they damage people physically. The U.S. Department of Defense has quietly begun battling environmental regulators in several states after the agencies attempted to force the military to clean toxic firefighting chemicals from polluted streams, marshes, and aquifers. The efforts marked the opening acts of which could turn into a nationwide war on legal liabilities, which the Pentagon estimates could reach into billions of dollars if it investigates the presence of chemicals at hundreds of bases across all 50 states. Few producers or users of PFAS, and that stands for polyfluoroalkali substances, right? Few producers or users of PFAS face potential liabilities as great as the U.S. military, which has already spent more than $200 million over the past half decade to start investigations of chemical family members, perforated sulfonate, or PFOS, perfluorooctanoic acid, PFOA, at more than 400 military bases across the country. These were fighting foams used by the military during training and emergencies in the 1970s. So, again, this stuff has been legendary. And, you know, to ask the DOD to do the right thing, you know, they don't. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens. Next story. The military leads all of their professions in the number of days spent drinking per year, a study finds. Well, is that a shock, right? You have a large percentage. Look, you have 60% of the Marine Corps is under the age of 26. That is the demographic that drinks the most in the nation. Yes, I think so. I'm looking it up. Stand by. Alcohol consumption by youth in the United States. Here's a big graph. Ooh. I don't want it by state. I want it by age. This is by age. All right. Here you go. Alcohol consumption by age people 12 to 20. What's interesting is that all alcohol consumption goes down. From it starts in 2002 to 2013. Okay. And they are 12 to 13 year olds has gone down, has been cut in half, according to this. Right. Let's see, what's this age group? 14 to 15 has gone from 16.6% to 9.5%. So that's been cut by almost half. let's see, what is it, 16 to 17-year-olds has gone from 32.6% to 22.7%. So that's about a 33% drop. And then in the age of 18 to 20-year-olds have gone from 51% that say they use alcohol to 43.8%. So you're talking about the demographic of the nation that uses alcohol. So, I mean, and you have money and you have the time to do it. So is anybody shocked? It should come as no surprise then. The data pulled from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and analyzed by the Delphi Behavior Group revealed that service members consume alcohol on more days of the year than any other profession. Close to 27,000 people across 25 different industries responded to surveys on alcohol consumption during the period of 2013 to 2017, with the average person reportedly consuming at least one drink 91 days per year. That's the average. Service members, meanwhile, led all other professions with an average of 130 days of drinking, or over one-third of the calendar year. Miners and construction workers were not far behind with 112 and 106 days per year actively. Despite these elevated numbers, the overall rate of drinking in the U.S. has reportedly decreased over the course of the last 2 years. So, interesting little study there. Nobody surprised, though. Why this U.S. general says Russian Wagner mercenaries in Africa concern me greatly. Wagner mercenaries, right? Do you remember the mercenaries that got whacked in Syria to the tune of somewhere between 200 and 400 of them? Those were Wagner mercenaries. Right. And so General Stephen Townsend, he's the nominee to lead U.S. Africa Command. Okay, in his testimony last week, here's what he said. Quote, I have some experience with these groups, and specifically the Wagner group from my time in Syria. I think they concern me greatly. I'm sure they concern General Waldhauser, who's currently the Marine in charge of AFRICOM. Right? So it is the Russian mercenary force. Quote, they're quasi-military, and we saw it play out in Crimea and the Ukraine. Little green men running around, not necessarily following the rules or behavior we would expect from proper armies. So I have a pretty significant concern about the use of these kinds of forces and the way the Russians are using them on the continent. If confirmed, this is something I'll certainly be looking at in greater detail, he added. It'll be an endeavor to try to figure out exactly what they're doing with them. So, yeah, I mean, we all saw it in the Ukraine and in the Crimea, right? These little green men with no patches on, they go and they start acting as military force. Yeah, it's the Russian government. Next story. U.S. withdraws troops from Libya amid rival militias fighting near the capital. So this story broke over the weekend. The United States said Sunday it is temporarily withdrawing some of its forces from Libya due to security conditions on the ground. As Libyan military commanders' forces advance towards the capital of Tripoli, clashing with rival militias. Quote, the security realities on the ground in Libya are growing increasingly complex and unpredictable, said General Thomas Waldhauser, head of U.S. Africa Command. Even with an adjustment of the force, which means reinforcing it, we will continue to remain agile in support of the existing U.S. strategy. Footage circulating online showed two apparent U.S. Navy transport craft maneuvering off the beach in Janzur, east of Tripoli, setting up plumes of spray as American forces were ferried to and from shore. That would probably be Osprey, and that's what the picture shows. So, anyway, that going on off the coast of Libya. Two other stories. Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy, Giordano, failed to exhibit exemplary conduct. What does that mean? The 14th Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy turned subordinates into waiters, serving him coffee and meals, bellowed and berated his staffers, and failed to report a gift bestowed on him as a high-ranking official, the IG determined. Obtained by Navy Times following a Freedom of Information Act request, the IG report into what sailors alleged was a toxic Pentagon post concluded that the Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy, Stephen Giordano, failed to exhibit exemplary conduct during the brief 96-week reign as a sea service senior enlisted leader. Can you imagine it? How does he get that far if he treats people like that? And you know, I mean, so if he's doing it at that level, you know he's done it his whole career. The Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy, yelling at sailors, using profanity towards them, and making jokes at their expense is not a good example of virtuous behavior, does not promote the general welfare of the enlisted personnel under his charge, and has the capacity to erode any trust and confidence. How about using them as servants? At the time, investigators failed to corroborate allegations that his driver chauffeured him in a government vehicle to the airport for official travel. Although he allegedly asked for the royal treatment frequently, only to be told by his staff it wasn't allowed. Attempts to reach him to comment on the story were unsuccessful. That might surprise you. All right, final story. As NATO banks on Poland, is the country becoming the new face of a nervous Europe? What are they nervous about? Russia. The U.S. military is slated to deepen its logistics footprint in the former Soviet bloc country of Poland, and contrary to recent proclamations from the Trump administration, NATO is actually paying for a share of it. Alliance officials are putting together the largest common construction project in recent memory, $260 billion from NATO, to realize a storage site for American combat vehicles in Poland. The equipment will be, this is like, remember the whole Camp Trump thing? Yeah, this is it. The equipment will be enough to outfit an armored brigade combat team, which comes with Abrams main battle tanks, Bradley infantry fighting vehicles, and countless support vehicles. The depot is meant to stash U.S. warfighting equipment in the Eastern European nation in case a confrontation with nearby Russia becomes a possibility. Pentagon officials considered the future facility of POWIDZ, P-O-W-I-D-Z, West Central Poland, as part of a global network of hardware stashes meant to serve as faraway armories for U.S. soldiers when there is fighting to be done. Current plans call for 650,000 square feet of controlled humidity warehouse space, vehicle maintenance facility, and supporting facilities, said U.S. Army spokeswoman Beth Clemens. The facility will operate at a very high level of readiness with vehicles, communications equipment, and all munition deployable at a moment's notice. High readiness storage. So, there you have it. Take that, Vlad. All right. We're going to take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on this Monday on your home fort, the All Warrior Radio Network.